Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. We'll talk about pruning trees and shrubs on the show today, and our guest is Laura Jull. She's an associate professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals, and she works out of the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. So as we talk with her, what questions do you have about the process of pruning? Do you have favorite pruning tools, for example? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And again, we would love to hear from you. And Laura Jull, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's good to be back. I hope everyone's doing well and staying healthy.
It's kind of cold out there today, but winter is a pretty good time, maybe the best time to prune trees and shrubs, isn't it?
Yeah, it actually is, because you can see, especially with deciduous trees, you can see the architecture of the plant without the leaves in the way. And also, it is a time of year where insects and diseases are not prevalent in the landscape, and it's a great time to prune your oaks right now before, they say April 1st. I'm kind of cautious. I go March 15th, and from now until March 15th. It has to do with the insect becomes active at temperatures above, 55 degrees. So if you need to do pruning, I suggest, if it requires climbing, to please hire a Wisconsin certified arborist. And the Wisconsin Arborist Association has a list of certified arborists on their website.
Yeah, that's a very, very good advice. Speaking from somebody who took a little tumble himself, I wasn't too far up the tree, fortunately.
Oh, Larry.
and I didn't break any bones, but I got bruised up a little bit. We don't want to do that. You don't want to do that if you're at all worried. And Laura's right. The certified arborists are they're certified for a reason. They're trained and they're ready to go, men and women who can do that for you. So,
yeah,
good advice.
The
plants, you mentioned oaks, but there are some plants that may be an exception to winter pruning.
Well, obviously, if there's storm damage that happens during the year, you obviously want to get in there and prune them right away. But particularly with elms and also oaks, really winter is the best time to prune them into early spring before bud break is the best time. For some species, there's been some that say with honey locust that summer pruning is better. There's still a lot of controversy out on that. I still like dormant season pruning. When it comes to evergreens, typically you wait until the candles emerge, and what that means is with pines in particular, the new growth is called a candle, even though it has nothing to do with lighting a candle.
Yeah.
You wait till that is fully fully grown, and then you can pinch those in half, and they can snap off before they harden quite easily. You don't want to remove all of it, just a part of it. And if that, you do that if you're trying to maintain a bushier habit on an evergreen.
Yeah, makes good sense. Brad in Lake Geneva has a question relating to exactly what we're talking about, so let's go there. Brad, hi.
Hi. Hey, I have a line of, I think there are you, shrubs that the previous owner planted. And many years later now, I've examined them, and they've got a lot of branches crossing each other. These things are maybe 7 feet tall, shorter than that when they've been trimmed. But I'm wondering if I can get in there and aggressively cut back all the branches that have crossed each other without harming the plants.
That is a good question. When it comes to something like an evergreen, like yew, and to really get in there and prune aggressively, yes, you can do that. The only problem is you might be creating holes in your shrub, significant holes, and also exposing the bark to potential winter injury. I would hold off until spring to do that. Plus, the new growth will flush and maybe cover up some of the holes you leave. But generally, we're more concerned with crossing and rubbing branches with trees in particular. Smaller shrubs, it's not that as big of a deal, though it's not good to have crossing and rubbing branches anyways on any plant. But it's something you'll have to do judicial cuts to make sure that you're pruning back to where the branch originated on the plant or to a lateral bud. But that's one thing I've seen used, prune back severely, and it'll take a couple of years, but they do fully recover.
All right. And when you said spring, you mean what, May or?
Yeah. You know, I hate to say this when you get out there, but May is a good time. June, I'd probably wait after a flush of growth or even before a flush of growth.
Okay. There you go, Brad. Thank you so much for calling. You don't have to get those pruners out right now. Hannah in Madison, what's on your mind?
Hi. So I have a question in regards to a fungus that I have spreading on a magnolia tree. This is just this beautiful, beautiful tree, but it has some fungus that's growing on it. It's like it's split between the bark. It's white. In the fall, it's turned kind of like orangish, and I'm actually calling on behalf of a friend. And she sprayed copper fungicide on it before, but we're not sure if it's really helping. So we're just curious, you know, what we can do to save this beautiful tree.
Yeah. Are you familiar with scale at all?
No.
Magnolia scale?
No.
Okay. Magnolia scale is actually caused by an insect, and the only reason why I mention that is we have a huge outbreak of magnolia scale in Wisconsin. I know I have it on mine, and I've been having someone treat it for me. If it's a true fungus, I would take a picture of it and send it to the UW-Madison Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. And, you know, granted, Brian prefers getting samples, but he can do some preliminary diagnosis online for you. So I would contact them first. Just Google UW-Madison Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and you can. There's instructions online on how to submit a picture / sample.
Yeah, and he'll be able to identify it and then offer some suggestions for treatment.
Yeah, because it really depends on what the fungi is. I don't want to make a recommendation until we know what the actual pathogen could be, because the treatment varies with the actual pathogen.
Yeah. There you go, Hannah. Thank you for calling. Let's turn to Dave in West Alice. Dave, hi.
Hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you today?
Yes. This really isn't a pruning thing other than the fact that I want to prune it to the ground and get rid of it. But I currently am working on cleaning out invasive honeysuckles in my backyard.
Good for you.
And I'm wondering, you know, I believe that's one of those plants that has what's called the allelotrophic stuff.
Allelopathic.
Yeah, that inhibits other things.
Uh-huh.
So when I cut those branches and everything off, can I just drop that to the ground, or do I have to worry about that stuff coming out of the green stuff that I'm cutting out?
I don't think so. You know, allelopathy typically is dealing at the root level. However, for mm-hmm. stuff like black walnut, the nuts and the branches and the roots and everything contains that chemical with juglone with black walnuts. But with honeysuckle, I'm not familiar with hearing that it's excreted from the stems, but you can always, you know, bundle them up, and if you have a burn pile or a fire pit, I can burn it in that. The main thing is to get the roots. And if you can't dig up the roots, I suggest, you know, especially coming in spring, early spring before it leaves out, is to cut the stems at the base and then immediately treat it with a systemic herbicide that is translocated down to the roots to get rid of it. I'm not a big pesticide person myself, but when it comes to invasives, if you don't dig up the entire root system, any remaining roots will just resprout.
And you got the problem all over again.
Yep.
With honeysuckle, buckthorn,
yep,
garlic mustard. If it's invasive, it's invaded my backyard. So.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And so for in here, here's a case, Laura, where Dave might want to wait till spring when it's warm so you can apply the
right. Yeah, it's
material.
It, you don't, yeah, thank you, Larry. You would not be applying herbicides right now. It's too cold, and they wouldn't work very well. You would wait until probably April, right before they're leafing out.
All right. There you go, Dave. Good luck. Sounds like you got a little cutting ahead of you next April. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. David in Rock Springs, your turn. Hi, David.
Hi there. Good morning. I have a dogwood bush that's been growing next to my driveway, and it's been expanding and expanding every year. I had to recently take down an old dead box elder tree, and it damaged a lot of the bush. And we're just wondering, how far can I prune this bush without killing it? I'd like to, like, cut it back severely so it's not, like, expanding out into my driveway. Is that doable?
Well, it depends on the shrub. Do you know what it is?
I think it's just a wild dogwood.
Okay, so it's deciduous. It's not evergreen.
Right. No, no. And it's got these arcing branches that are kind of reddish. That's not a red osier dogwood. I think it's just a, I'm not sure what brand it is. But
well,
I see them out in the woods.
If it's a it's a true shrub, not a tree, correct?
Right. Yes, it's
okay.
A shrub.
A pagoda dogwood. With shrub dogwoods, especially like red twig, gray dogwood, silky dogwood, a lot of those sucker from the root system and produce these colorful stems, if not gray stems with gray dogwood. And you can do what we call thinning pruning, where you would remove about, I don't know, it depends on your shrub, a quarter to a third of the largest diameter branches back to the base of the plant. And what that does, it takes out the older, especially with red twig dogwood, it takes out the older stems that tend to lose some of the coloring as they get thicker in diameter, and it promotes more sucker growth at the base, so you get new stems that come up that are more colorful. Obviously, with gray dogwood, it's just gray stems, but those plants do really well with that type of pruning. Not all shrubs like to be pruned that way, but those do in particular. And again, I have fact sheets that are on the UW, University of Wisconsin Division of Extension Horticulture website. And that address, just so I can plug the website, is HORT, which stands for Hort, dot extension dot WIS as in Sam, C, dot E-D-U. And that is the website for the Wisconsin Horticulture Division of Extension. And it contains all the fact sheets that I'm talking about today, as well as many others. And it's a great resource for homeowners.
And the ones that we're talking about today on the show, we already, you just sent us a link, Jim's telling me. And we'll post those on our program notes at the Larry Mueller Show as well, so people can just click to there if they just want to get the specific ones we're talking about today. They'll all be there as well. But it's good to have that hort.extension.wisc address, too, because there's so many publications that you can learn from on that site, for sure. David, I hope that helped. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Laura Jull, our guest today, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Laura Jahl, our guest, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, our guest. And before we go back to the phones and talking some more with Laura, I wanted to mention that you can take a virtual garden tour. You can ask gardening experts your questions and start planning your garden at PBS Wisconsin's Garden and Landscape Expo. It's free and it's online February 20th and the 21st. So from your own screen at home, you can dream of springtime blooms. And you register and find out more at wigardenexpo.com. And everybody who registers by January 31st will go into a drawing to have a chance for a virtual meet and greet with me. So we'll sit down for a bit, and you can ask me any question you want about the station or about me personally, and I'll ask you some questions, and we'll have a good time doing it. But anyway, you need to go to wigardenexpo.com. The main part is that expo from the 20th and 21st is going to be fabulous, and maybe if your name gets strong, you'll have a chance to sit down virtually with me and you can ask me any question you want. How's that? All right. Lee in Green Bay, it's your turn. Lee, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning. I have a question and a comment. My question being, I've got some Fraser firs that are approximately, 4 feet or so. At this time of the year, can I cut back the leader above another, bud to kind of keep it from climbing, keep them from climbing? They're opening up more, and I don't want to shape them as a so-called Christmas tree, but I'd like to kind of keep them down a little bit. Is this a good time of the year to do that?
One of my questions I have, first of all, when you say you have a Fraser fir and you want to cut back the leader, is this not in a space that the tree can grow tall?
Oh, yeah, but I kind of don't want it to really open up real fast to grow tall.
Okay,
I'm going to cut it just above what I do is I cut it above a bud that might be on the north, kind of facing out north, so it'll pull itself back to the south when it starts to take over as a leader.
Okay. Yeah, I'm personally not a big fan of cutting the actual terminal leader. More of the side branches, if you want to maintain that bushiness and to fill in more, you would not be pruning necessarily the terminal leader unless, like you said, going back to a bud. And with firs and spruces, you can do that. With pines, you cannot, because pines only grow at the very tip, whereas spruce and firs may have, not always, but may have lateral buds farther back down the stem. Now, if the terminal leader dies, a side branch or branches will try to assume and grow into a new leader. That's happened to mine, my Serbian spruce and my fir in my yard, because crows land on it and they break off the terminal leader, and then a side branch starts growing up, and then eventually you select the one that I guess is the biggest or the best looking, and then the other ones you don't want to have multiple leaders on one tree. But in terms of the side branches, to maintain its bushiness habit, again, that fact sheet that I'm referring to tells you how to do that. Again, the time of year to do it is typically after the buds break. Typically, I would wait until June for that, and you can remove about a half to two-thirds of an unbranched tip to keep the tree fuller. But again, you want to wait until that new growth is out there, typically in June, very early summer, late spring is when you would do that.
All right. There you go, Lee. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Rita in Milwaukee, let's turn to you now. Hi, Rita.
Hi. I just had a comment that people should probably check with their local ordinances or whatever before burning. In the city of Milwaukee, I believe it's prohibited under any circumstances But there's free pickup, and if you have a very large amount, you can drop it off for free at one of the self-help centers.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I know I live in near Madison, and we have, especially in the spring, they have like brush pickup weeks. So it's always good to get out there and prune before they come. Sometimes yeah. I miss that. But, yeah, that's another way. Or especially if it's evergreen. So this time of year, I actually went and collected Christmas trees that were in my neighborhood. I know they thought I was weird dragging their Christmas tree away. But I put them up in my yard for the birds to have a little bit of cover for the winter. And then come springtime, I cut the branches off. I'm allowed to, I have a fire pit and I'm allowed to burn. And boy, those evergreens are quite flammable.
Oh, yeah.
And they smell terrific.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. Rita, thank you. That's good advice. You do need to check your local ordinances.
Yeah.
And that's a very, very good point to bring up. Thank you. Nancy in New Richmond, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have two, I think, easy questions. I have very tall lilac bushes, and I can't reach the flowers.
Uh-huh.
When would be a good time to cut them down to my height so I can get the flowers? And my second question is, we have a very steep hillside that's all dirt right now, and I'm wondering what I could plant on there this spring that won't need to be mowed.
Okay. Well, the first question regarding the lilac, and I do have it's not a fact sheet, but it's an actual extension A-series publication on lilacs, and I talk about pruning. But you can also refer to the fact sheet I did on pruning deciduous shrubs. Again, that's on the Wisconsin Horticulture website for extension. And when it comes to lilacs, that's the thing, you know, it's a real bummer when the flowers are way out of eye and nose level. So with lilacs, not all lilacs have this type of pruning. The smaller ones, like Palobin, you don't want to do this to. But when it comes to the large French lilacs, for example, you would take the largest diameter branches, so the ones that are really thick in diameter, and you remove about a quarter to a third of them and take those all the way back to the ground. Saw them off because that wood is tough. And you want to leave the younger branches there. And what that does, in particular with the common lilac, it will, just like with the dogwoods, the red twig dogwoods and gray dogwoods, it would encourage sucker growth. And the suckers would come back up, as well as the side branches on the stems would break on the existing stems, and you would have flowers then at nose and eye level. And you're going to want to do this probably every couple years or so. Just remove some of the larger branches back to the base. And, you know, if you don't need to a couple years, then you don't have to. But this is the best way to prune them and keep them sizable in the landscape so that you can actually reach and smell the flowers, because that's the whole point of growing them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we have that at publication, too, on our WPR.org/Larry website. So you can get it there, too, if you want to today. Click quickly.
And
thank
then
you. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Asked the second question. I want to make sure.
Yeah.
That. You have a very steep slope, and it's bare soil right now, and you want to plant on it. There are lots of different things you can plant. There's plants you can use to stabilize slopes. It really depends on your soil type, so getting a soil test first. And also, always, before you dig any plant, call Digger's Hotline, please, because you can avoid potential
shocking
shock.
Experience.
Yeah, and also there may be buried utility lines that you just don't even know they're there. And then next, in regards to plants, if you're really trying to stabilize the slope and prevent future mowing, some of the sumacs, though granted, if you get the tall sumacs, it can get 20 feet tall, but the one I like in particular is our native aromatic, Rus aromatica, that's the fragrant sumac, though it's not fragrant as you think a lilac. When you cut the stems, it actually kind of stinks. but it's only when you cut the stem, so flowers don't stink. But that is one that quickly suckers and fills in an area and helps stabilize soil. There's a cultivar in particular called Grow Low, Grow Low, and just what it means, it grows low. And that one only gets about 2 feet in height, and it really helps stabilize soil. There's many other plants you can choose from, both. I would probably go with a woody ornamental to fill in. You know, some people, and I've seen this, and it's a native, but it can be aggressive, but it works well in stabilizing slopes, is Virginia creeper. But that's a vine. That is not a shrub. And it will take a number of years to have it fill in, but that's if it's a really steep area, you might want to think about that one.
The way to go, possibly. Yeah, Nancy, thanks so much. Well, Reggie in Oshkosh, your turn now. Hi, Reggie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My neighbor against my backyard has some evergreen trees. They aren't like pine or anything, but they grow over my side probably a good 6 feet, and I'm redoing my fence in the spring. So with the permission, I want to know when is a good time to cut them back to the fence line, because it's like half the tree.
Mm-hmm. Boy, you ask a very good question. Do you like your neighbor?
Well, we haven't really talked much, so I'd like to not kill his trees if possible.
Well, if you remove more than, you know, a quarter of the growth on a tree, it really sends it into shock. And you also, is it evergreen or deciduous?
I really don't know. I know they're pine needle-y type trees.
Okay, they're evergreen. So it keeps its leaves throughout the year.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's evergreen. Yeah. You know, without seeing the situation, it's hard to tell, but you're suggesting removing considerable amount of tissue on those plants. You could be sending it into a downward spiral. I would need to see a picture of it, but I would talk to your neighbor, and you can do selective pruning, removing some of the branches, but not 6 feet worth. That would be very damaging to the plants. And also, you know, I always say plants make good fences. I know you probably want to put in a fence, but I know people that want that fence but don't want to look at a fence, and therefore they put in evergreens, and that maintains that barrier.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing to do would be to talk to the neighbor.
Absolutely.
On it.
Absolutely.
yeah, for sure. There you go, Reggie. Thank you. Matt in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Matt. Oh, we're not hearing you, Matt. I'm sorry. You might want to call back and try and get a different line. Your line is not working well. I think Matt had a tamarack where the leader was dead. But I don't know any more than that. So, Matt, give a call back, and we'll see if we can get you back on. In the meantime, let's go to Nancy in Grafton. Nancy, hello.
Good morning. You know, my husband years ago, he was a logger. So he worked for a fella on a part-time job, and he cut trees, and he planted trees, and he all that stuff. But part of his wages was a new tree. A maple tree. Well, he planted that tree in front of my house here. I'm looking out the window and I'm seeing it, you know. But it's old. It's really old. And Bob's not here to take care of it. And son of a gun, that some of the branches are dying off. And I'm, you know, it probably should be cut down. But I can't do that because that was his pay. And so anyhow, my son works in a village, so he said, Ma, I'll come over and I'm going to trim your tree back and cut back those dead branches, you know. And I don't know if this is a smart thing to do or if it should be replaced. And if I got to replace that tree, I don't know what the heck to plant in there, you know. And if it does get cut down, I'm going to take all those branches, those big fat branches, and cut them into slices, and people are going to get a piece of the wood from Bob's tree. So what should we do? I got to keep, if I can keep that going yet for a while, because I want to keep going too for a while.
Yeah, okay. The first thing I thought of immediately was, does it really need to be cut down? Obviously, I don't see the tree, so I can't tell you. If it's got a number of dead branches, and quite frankly, with any large tree, I highly suggest, and I don't get any money for promoting these people, but I highly suggest you contact an ISA, which is International Society of Arboriculture, certified arborist, and they have a website. It's actually the Wisconsin Arborist Association website, their division of ISA, and their website is www.wisa-a.org. And that is the website for the Wisconsin Arborist Association. And there is a link you can click on right on the home page. It says Find an Arborist. And you can find arborists, certified arborists, for where you are based on your location. And it will come up with a number of different arborists that service your area. And I prefer using, you know, people that know what they're doing. I'm not saying your, I don't know if it was your son or your nephew. I'm not saying they don't know what they're doing, but I'd be very careful. A lot of people, I don't know if people realize this, people are killed every year from pruning their own trees that require climbing. People get on ladders and then the ladders fall, or it could be that the branches are in the utility lines. Then that situation, you would need to call the utility company. Don't attempt fate. If it's a small tree where you can reach all the branches from the ground, or with a small pruning pole pruner and it's away from power lines, then you can do it yourself. But you prune in the dormant season, preferably before bud break. And again, I would really like you to, you know, potentially, but I don't know what the species is, but I would try to save the tree. Sometimes just a haircut, you know, get out those dead branches is all that's needed. But please try to consider hiring a certified arborist. They really know what they're doing and can save you a lot of headaches and potentially someone's life.
Yeah. There you go, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling. Good luck with that tree. Appreciate your call. Well, Matt in Madison, it's your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Terrific. Yeah, I have a American tamarack or larch, and I have read that they're kind of susceptible. There's a particular wasp that lays its eggs typically in the leader, and I think that's what happened because my leader, about it must be about 14 inches, died last year, and so this established a new leader, and so I'm looking for if she's familiar with that wasp, and then advice establishing a new leader.
Okay. Establishing Larry? A new... Yeah,
I
establishing...
I very well.
So he's got a tamarack or a larch, mm-hmm. and he thinks there may have been some wasps that... or insects that essentially killed the top 2 feet of the leader of the tree.
Okay.
And it's starting a new leader, but he wonders about... training that, what he needs to do for that new leader coming up, and also do you know anything about those bugs that may have caused the problem with his tamarack or larch?
Yeah, I'm not sure which insects in particular caused the terminal to die. I know with pines there's specific ones, but I'm not sure on tamarack. In terms of trying to, you know, to find out which wasp it is or find out what it is, I would contact the insect diagnostic clinic at UW-Madison. And the person is P.J. Leisch, L-I-E-S-C-H. I hope I spelled that right. But PJ is like Brian Huddleston's counterpart. He does the insects, and he might be able to give you a little more feedback on what particular insect it is. I don't want to guess. I'd rather have PJ determine which one it is. Now, regarding the new leaders, you've got one. You said that it was establishing. Make sure it's just one and not multiple leaders. And like I said, a side branch often, as it's starting to come out, will start to go vertical, and that becomes your new leader. That's a wonderful thing about conifers. They do this normally in nature. It's kind of like Mother Nature's way of correcting. I've had a number of evergreens in my yard that where the leader was knocked out by a bird that sat on it. Maybe it was a little too heavy and knocked it out. But, yeah, and it'll start growing. Just to prevent further damage to that terminal leader, again, I would talk to PJ.
All right. Thank you very much, Matt, for calling. And Tom in Buffalo County, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Larry. Thank you very much. Yes, I have a birch tree. I think it's a river birch. Anyway, I have woodpecker damage that was about 8 feet up. Mm-hmm. And that tree is about that. Where the damage is, it's about 5 inches in diameter, and the damage is about 6 inches long. And everything above that didn't leaf out last summer.
Okay.
Now, I read about where you can splice in about a 1-inch diameter branch and splice with 4 or 5 times. And anyway, to repair the damage or go around it. Is there a good website that you know of that has a good tutorial on how to do that?
Okay, there's a couple issues here. What color is the bark?
It's white.
It's white. Okay, yeah. It's not a river birch then. It's that's okay. There are some cultivars of river birch that have lighter bark, almost whitish, but the rest of it is tan. And more than likely, you probably have bronze birch borer, which is an insect that is notorious on white bark birches, all of them. Yeah. And this insect bores into the tree, and woodpeckers sometimes go after them, you know, for the grubs, or also there's sapsuckers, too, that go into birches as well. But when you say that the top of the tree has died back, that, and it's a white birch, the first thing I think of is bronze birch borer. And this is a lethal insect. It will eventually kill the tree. And it happens on birches that are stressed, water stress, droughts, you know, like drought stress, for example, and also heat stress. A lot of people, I'm not saying you have, but a lot of people plant the white bark birches and they do need full sun, the top part of the plant, but the roots like to be in shade. It doesn't like a hot, dry environment. And typically planting it on an eastern exposure is better so that the top of the tree remains in sun, but the roots are shaded in the afternoon. That reduces heat stress and less likely to get this borer insect. I would do that. Now, you're talking about splicing a branch into it and taking over. That is a very detailed process, and it's called inarching. And that's a special form of grafting, and you're not just taking any branch. It's very detailed on how to do that. You can search online under repairing damaged trees with inarching and bridge graft. There's two different systems. One starts at the ground level, and one is higher up in the tree. And that requires tremendous skill as a grafter to be inserting those twigs. It's very detailed. And unless you know how to do it, I would not do it. But if it's a true white birch and the top has died back, maybe it's time to get rid of the tree. I hate saying that, but white bark birches are not meant to live 50 years. Some do up north. But I'm not sure where you're located, but they generally don't live a very long time because of their susceptibility to the boar insects. River yeah. birch, on the other hand, is resistant.
Yeah, Tom's in Buffalo County, so.
Okay.
Tom, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Laura Jowell, our guest today, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest Laura Jowell, professor and extension specialist in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, talking about a lot about winter pruning today with her. And it's nice to have her back and nice to have you listening in. And I think we'll go right to the phones. Our phone lines are all full. Dave in North Freedom, it's your turn. Hi, Dave. Dave, are you there? Dave, are you there? Oh, maybe we lost Dave. Let's try Linda in Oshkosh. Hello? Oh, Dave's back.
Hello?
Dave, are you? Dave, yeah. What's on your mind?
Yeah, a couple questions for you. I've got 20-year-old white spruce, and I planted them alongside a lawn. They've gotten quite large, and they're. I'd kind of like to raise some of the lower branches on the lawn side. But what I worry is that if I bring them up like 3 or 4 feet to get grass to start growing there, the lower branches above will start drooping down. The other thing, I've got a lot of seeps around, and I've got an issue with white pine blister rust. I'm thinking of raising some of the lower branches on both the white spruce and the white pine to try and increase air movement and see if I can decrease some of that, both the white pine blister rust and other diseases on those spruce.
Okay. What do you think, Laura?
With white pine blister rust, it is a rust disease. It's caused by a fungus. And that fungus spends half of its life cycle on white pine and the other half on native gooseberries, such as, Ribes is the genus name, but gooseberries and, I'm trying to think of the other word for gooseberries. Oh, Larry, help me out here.
I'm not... All I can think about is trailing and erect gooseberries.
Yeah, there's another common name for them. I just can't think of it off the top of my head. But getting rid of those ribes species or gooseberries, that would be really, or currants. Sorry, that's the other common name, currant. Those can be a carrier and often are. And once you get rid of one of the carriers, like currants and gooseberry, then your pathogen cannot live its full life cycle because you've gotten rid of half of the host plants. Now, if you already have white pine blister rust, this is a lethal disease, and it will kill your white pines. And it normally attacks the upper branches. It can attack lower, and Brian Huddleston would be a good person to talk to at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. You can email him or the clinic in general, and he'll get it. A message regarding treatment. There is a fact sheet on Wisconsin Horticulture Extension Horticulture website. It's that same website I gave earlier, which if you didn't hear me before, it is H-O-R-T for hort.extension.wisc.edu. And he does have information and fact sheets on white pine blister rust, so I highly suggest you take a look at that. Now, regarding limbing up spruces, I'm weird. I like branches to the ground. I personally think that is so much more ornamental than limbing up and then trying to grow grass underneath. The grass is not going to be happy, and the tree's not going to be happy. Grass needs sun. And yes, there are more shade-tolerant turf grasses like some of the fescues, but you kind of distract from the natural form of the tree. It's meant to have branches to the ground, and over time, it naturally sheds some of its lower branches. But to limb everything up, now, when it comes to spruce, we have the disease issues. Spruces, especially blue spruce, white spruce, Norway spruce, they're all very, very susceptible to rhizosphera, which I don't think I can spell it off the top of my head, but it's a needle it's a needle blight, and there's also Ware's cushion rust. There's also cytosporic canker, and by limbing up maybe a couple or selectively pruning out some of the mid the branches halfway up the tree, not removing all of them, just selectively removing a few, does increase airflow. But if your plant it looks really healthy, I would let the branches, leave them on the ground if you can, maybe limb a foot worth off the ground. But, you know, an evergreen loses its, to me, loses its beauty if we keep whacking away at the lower branches to try to grow grass underneath it, which is going to be hard to mow and even hard to grow. Grass is also very competitive with tree roots for water and nutrient uptake. So if you, you know, don't, if there's weeds coming in, perhaps mulching underneath those evergreens. But again, no more than a couple inches, and please keep away from the trunk of the tree. Bark, mulch should never be piled around the trunk of a tree.
Yeah, there you go, Dave. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Linda in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, hello. What's on your mind?
I was wondering if you have a recommendation for a replacement tree for all these white ash that has succumbed to emerald ash borer. Some woodlots are just, you know, just wonder what you could put in a woodlot to make it look better, grow better.
Yeah. Well, I'm a huge fan of oaks. I'm kind of a nut, personally and professionally. I'm a huge fan of, and not sure where you are in the state.
Oshkosh.
Okay. You could grow, for example, our native chinkapin oak, and it's called chinkapin. If I'm trying to spell it, C-H-I-N-K-A-P-I-N, chinkapin.
I think that's right.
Yeah, and that is a native oak to southern Wisconsin. It tolerates high pH very well. I have one in my yard. I really like it. And then, of course, there's also swamp white oak, though you got to watch the pH, soil pH on that one. It doesn't like high pH. That's another excellent oak. Our native white oak, which is just gorgeous in the fall for fall color. That also is one that you got to check the soil pH, because a pH above 7.3, 7.4, it will get very yellow and chlorotic. There's always our native bur oak. It's another phenomenal tree. It's slow growing at first, but it does. Actually, at first, it's more quicker growing than in old age. Everybody says, oh, it's so slow growing. You know, I've seen bur oaks put on at least 6 inches a year if it's properly watered. And then if you don't want an oak, there's always, Kentucky coffee tree is one. That's another. All these that I'm listing right now are native. And I mention native plants only because you say you have a woodlot. And I personally like, you know, with woodlots, natural woodlots, to grow native species. I'm not against exotic species. Those are perfectly fine. But when it comes to a woodlot situation, I try to plant more of the native plants. You can always go with a maple, but to be honest, we have so many maples in this state. And if you want a good maple, our state tree, the sugar maple.
Yeah. And a variety, you know, you mentioned a variety there, a number of oak trees, for example. It's just good to have a variety of trees in a situation like that, I think. It just adds so much to the to the beauty of the place.
And it feeds the wildlife.
Yeah.
Oaks are a very, very good tree for pollinators and a number of insects, good insects.
Yeah. There's a great book about the march of the oak across Europe that I loved. I interviewed the author, and they're just a fabulous, fabulous tree.
Yep.
So, Linda, consider that, will you? Appreciate your call very much. Well, Laura Jowell is our guest today. Laura is a professor of extension and extension specialist for woody ornamentals. She works out of the Department of Horticulture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She comes by every so often to talk with us about a variety of things, but we zeroed in on winter pruning today. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and our guest is Laura Jowell, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. What questions do you have for Laura about your shrubs, your trees, or vines? Give maybe a pruning question. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go right back to the phones. Kurt in Antioch, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Kurt.
Hey, good afternoon, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a quick question. I'm right at the Illinois-Wisconsin border. I have a nice-sized lot with a bunch of oak trees on it. And I, by chance, have a nice new oak tree growing wildly. Must have come down from an acorn, obviously. It's about 4 feet tall, but it's in a bad place in my yard, too close to the septic field. And I'm just curious if a tree like that can be transplanted, and if so, how would I do it, and when's the best time of the year to do it? And I'll hang up and listen on here. Thank you.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you. When it comes to moving, yeah, and granted, it's only 4 feet tall, it still can be transplanted pretty easily. I would do that in the spring before bud break. Preferably before May, like in April. Once bud break starts, do not transplant it. Wait till the leaves have fully expanded, and preferably not in the heat of summer. Oaks don't like to be transplanted in the fall. A lot of species can, but oaks in particular don't like to be dug in the fall, and that has to do with regenerating a new root system. So spring is the best time to transplant your oaks and try to get as much of the root system as possible. It's more shallow than it is deep. So getting out of those roots, I go at least several feet away from the trunk of the tree if possible. I've seen people use forks where they're actually lifting up the main order roots from the ground, because those roots aren't going to be deep. Everybody thinks they grow like carrots, but since it's been in the ground a while, that taproot will have started to branch. It really depends. It may still be a pretty good taproot. So again, you want to get as much as possible dug up, and don't be afraid of pruning that taproot. Not out, but back.
Randy emailed that she has green velvet and wintergreen boxwoods.
Yep.
Lost a few in his hedge and has replanted. Can he cut back the old ones to make it look even?
Well, you know, normally I would say yes, but because there is a very severe disease that is lethal to boxwoods, and it's called boxwood blight, And it's a disease that wasn't around much 10 years ago. It's really just been exploding all over the U.S. And the cultivars of boxwood you mentioned that you have are very susceptible to it. There are some newer cultivars coming out. I know some of them aren't hardy here, and there are some coming out that are more hardy. There's an extension publication on the UW-Madison Extension Horticulture website, and I gave that address already, that is deals with boxwood blight. And I worked with Brian to come up with a list of ones that are less susceptible. Less susceptible does not mean immune. So if I were you, knowing those two cultivars and knowing how prevalent boxwood blight is, it's just a matter of time that those plants may succumb to it. And the fact that you had so many with dead branches, I wonder if that's what happened to the ones you have in the yard.
Yeah, I wonder too. Yeah, good points. Lori in Shawano, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I just want to thank your guest for that comment about just letting the evergreens be the way they are.
Yeah.
I've got four Norway spruce in my yard, and unfortunately only one is all the way down to the ground. Unfortunately, somebody before I lived here trimmed up the other ones about 4 feet, and with the spruce, the way these grow, they just kind of hang and droop, and they're so pretty. And one of the most beautiful properties I looked at years ago when I was looking for land was, it was about 80 acres, and about 5 to 10 acres was just all kinds of pines, and they all were grown down to the ground, and it was just one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, one of the most beautiful forests. And lots of properties that I looked at that I just remember the most as being just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I love that form. Lori, thank you so much. I would second the motion. Well, Mo and Okano, what's on your mind?
I have some arborvitaes, and of course, they're right on the fence line. They're a nice block, but some of the branches are growing over to the other fellow's property, and then when he backs a trailer up or something, he runs into them, and he had mentioned that I should trim those. Now, if I trim them, when do I do it? How much can I take off? That type of thing.
Yeah, you know, maintaining a good relationship with your neighbors is really important. When it comes to arborvitae, they're kind of like yews in that they do take more, I don't want to say drastic pruning, but they're more forgivable with pruning. And with arborvitaes in particular, I would probably prune them probably after the first big flush of growth. For example, these species in particular, like hemlocks, arborvitae, and yews, often have dormant buds farther back down on the stem. And they can be hard to see, but they will reflush and cover up an area that you cut. I did years of pruning on a landscape prune. I would try to do selective pruning, not with head shears. I don't like head shears. That doesn't create a natural look to me. I would use a pair of hand pruners and go in there and cut branches judiciously, meaning not everything at first. And what you want to do is to bring in some of that growth back to where that branch originated. Again, not cutting into trunk wood. And I have some good information on those fact sheets that we talked about of when to prune, how to prune. You want to hide your pruning cuts. Nobody likes to see stubs and no branches. You can shear hemlocks and arborvitaes and yews. It's just your preference, but personally, I like the more natural look. I think it's more aesthetically pleasing. You don't want to, like, create bare branches all the way up and down the plant. That would not look good.
There you go.
But I would wait until late spring or early summer after the growth has expanded.
Yeah. There you go, Mo. Thank you. Christy in Dane County, your turn. Hi, Christy.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. We live in a woods, and in 2018, we were given a hydrangea that's four very limited sun, mostly shade. Mm-hmm. How and when should we prune? And I will hang up and take your answer on the radio.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, with hydrangeas, it really depends on which type of hydrangea. If you're saying that it was actually good for shade, it's probably the smooth hydrangea, which is Hydrangea arborescens, and probably the cultivar Annabelle. I'm just speculating that that's the cultivar. I don't know which one it is. With that one in particular, you can cut them back in late spring, typically before bud break, back to within a couple inches of the ground. I know I've done that with mine, and it will the buds that are still there will break, and you get a new shrub. That's a very forgiving shrub in terms of how to prune those. And again, it's more information is available on, and also pictures, on the website, the Wisconsin Extension Horticulture fact sheet page. Anyways, and those recover very easily, and it'll still flower that summer. But you have to do it in early spring before growth starts, because if you wait until May or June, you may be cutting off the flower buds for that year.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Bill in Deerfield, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, thank you. So we have a very, very large bur oak kind of up on a little hill, and over the last 20 years or so, some red cedar have grown up, and now they're like 5-6 inches in diameter, and they're growing up underneath and like starting to get up into the lower canopy. Should I cut them out?
It's your preference. Personally, I would, only because I love bur oaks, and they're so majestic in their form and their habit. And over time, those junipers are going to be shaded too much by that bur oak. And junipers like full sun only. They don't like to be in the shade, and they'll get very sparse, spindly, kind of ugly looking. Unfortunately, our native eastern red cedar is also very susceptible to cedar apple rust, which you'll get these gelatinous orange blobs all over the plant. It really is astonishing. Well, I think it's pretty cool looking. Brian does too. But that rust spends a half of its life cycle on the eastern red cedar in particular, and the other half on rosaceous plants like crabapples and hawthorns and quince and so on. If you do prune, and that's the nice thing about the junipers, if you cut them out at ground level, they're not going to resprout. They're not like so many other plants that can resprout. Junipers are pretty much, you cut them out, they're done. It was probably planted by birds, to be honest, sitting in the oak tree.
Zach in Ashland emailed that he has a very large big-tooth aspen tree in his backyard. This past summer, it sprouted a lot of suckers from the roots, and he's hoping to transplant them elsewhere on his property, hopefully to replace some buckthorn that he's getting rid of. What's the best way to transplant those suckers? The main tree also appears to be near the end of its life, with several large branches that didn't have any leaves this past year. And he wonders, are these suckers a last hurrah for the dying tree, or is it some other environmental factor?
Well, it can happen just naturally. Aspens, quaking aspen, big-tooth aspen, they're notorious for spreading from the root system. They send up suckers all over the place, and that's just, they're not from seeds, they're actual suckers from the root system. And that will be a reoccurring problem every year. Both those species, quaking aspen and big-tooth aspen, are often grow in large colonies. In fact, they're some of the largest plants in the world are colonies of these aspen, quaking aspen in particular. The trees aren't large, but it's been clonally propagated naturally. And it takes up a huge amount. I forgot what the numbers were. It was one area, I think it's in Michigan, another is in Colorado, of historic levels, all genetically identical to the original plant that covered miles.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty astonishing when you think about it. But, you know, aspen and big tooth aspen, both of them are not long-lived species. These are pioneer species that move into an area, establish themselves, grow, and then eventually die in more successional forest species like the maples, like oaks, and so on, move in, sugar maple in particular. So, yes, you can dig those suckers up. You probably would want to do them before they leaf out, and I would dig up as much of that area with the roots as possible to plant elsewhere in your yard if that's what you would like. There's also many other native trees, I mentioned some earlier, that you could plant also to replace buckthorn in your wooded lot.
There we go. John in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi there. I got two questions on buckthorn and sumac, but hey, first I just got a quick comment. I know you've had two callers calling in about trees too close to the property line. I've seen too many people when they plant trees, they just don't think about how wide and tall the tree is going to get, and they often seem to plop it right on the property line, which kind of always amazes me. So just a comment. But buckthorn, I've been cutting out chunks of buckthorn every spring and fall for the last 3 or 4 years. I got about 2 acres of land. I'm getting it pretty much under control, if you can believe that. What I'm doing is I either try to pull it out of the ground, or if it's too big, I'll cut it down with a chainsaw or lopper, and then I'll use some Bayer brush killer on it, on the stumps in the ground. Mm-hmm. That seems to be working pretty good. And then I'm spraying once a year with a killer, brush killer, to kind of keep down the seeds that might be germinating up. Do you have any other recommendations on how to handle that?
Well, it sounds like you're doing what needs to be done.
Yeah.
I would be very careful not to spray any of the native plants that are growing near it. And so one of the best times of year to get rid of buckthorn is in late fall, because they tend to retain their leaves much later than the native species, so you can see them fairly easily in the woods. And then cutting them at the base, and then immediately treat the stumps with a systemic herbicide. Otherwise, they will resprout. And buckthorn in particular is a bear to pull out. Unlike honeysuckles, where you wrap a chain around it and a tractor and you can generally pull them out of the soil much easier, you can't do that with buckthorn very easily. They have a pretty extensive root system. And yes, getting rid of the seedlings, good for you in doing this. Buckthorn is such a horrible, horrible invasive plant. So is many of the honeysuckles, not the vine honeysuckles like Dropmore Scarlet and some other, and our native honeysuckles are not invasive. So, but in terms of buckthorn, yeah, you're doing what needs to be done, because the seed bank is huge.
Thank you, John. Rick in Sparta, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Well, good morning, sir. Thanks for letting me ask my question. I have a number of variegated dogwoods, pretty common, very common. You know, it's got the red sticks on it and all that junk. How do I trim those? So out of control.
Okay, that's a great question. I hate to always pimp my own publications, because I'm not trying to be arrogant. But there is an extension publication on the UW-Madison Extension Horticulture website, and I gave that address several times during this presentation. Go to that, and I have a fact sheet on pruning deciduous shrubs, and red twig dogwoods in particular. You can be pretty drastic in the pruning. Typically, I like thinning pruning, where you are taking out the largest diameter branches back to the base of the plant. I don't like to cut them all off, because I really like that red color and I want something to look at. So just about a third of them every couple years or so. Depends on how fast they're growing. And that way you get young stems coming up that are often more colorful than the real old stems that kind of turn brown instead of red. And I would do that primarily before leaf break. So typically, you know, March, April, even early May before bud break is the best time to do it, because you can get in there and see what's going on. Also, is I really like doing it in the dormant season because there's a disease that is very susceptible, or these plants are very susceptible to, and it's a canker, stem canker disease. And really, these red twig dogwoods should never be sheared. And what that does, it creates a huge wound, and the pathogen moves down the stem, and you get this yellowish color canker on the stems. So removing some of the lower branches, the inner larger branches is the best way to prune. But they do sucker. They're going to get big. They're not a foundation plant.
There you go, Rick. Thank you. And Deborah in Brown Deer. Hi, Deborah.
This is a great conversation. I just want to thank you so much. Okay, you're welcome. My sister lives in the Upper Peninsula, and she's got two huge, and I mean 50 feet high, and they've been there about 80 years, oak trees. And one is actually heaving, the roots are heaving the right side of the driveway, which is the original driveway from like when the house was first built. And it was, so anyway, we've had people come out and look at it. I wonder if it should just be cut down totally. It's been trimmed a couple times, but there's oaks coming up everywhere. Oh, there's so many oaks, so I'm trying to get all of them up from between the other side of the house so the neighbors don't have to deal with those, because the bigger they get, the harder they are to move or do augment.
Yeah, with oaks, again, hiring a certified arborist to get in there if they choose to prune. I hate cutting down oaks if they're healthy. Oaks are majestic trees, and they have such an important role in our environment, not only to birds and small mammals, but also to a lot of beneficial insects. There's more oaks in general have the most of all the species of trees have the most beneficial insects on it than any other species. Now, if it's becoming a hazard, there's a target, meaning this tree is leaning so bad it's going to fall on your house, your neighbor, or your car, then it might be wise to take it out. But I really don't like cutting down healthy oak trees that are not a potential hazard.
Yeah, and a certified arborist should be the one to do it, Deborah, as well. Well, Laura, here we are. Another show in the can, so to speak. It goes by quickly. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, anytime, Larry. Just let me know.
Laura Jell, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. A lot of the fact sheet she talked about today, you can go to wpr.org/Larry. And find them there on our website under program notes. Let's see here. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, Mark Koniak from the Green Bay Botanical Gardens will be with us. So we'll look forward to that. And Monday we talk with our weather guys again and folks from the Energy Institute. Thanks for listening. Hey, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.